Welcome again, dear listeners, to Food Conversations Season 7. Now, before we begin, we must not forget that we are living and working on Shkwempikulu, the ancestral, unceded, and actually stolen lands of the Shkwepmik people. It's clear that doing everything we can to resolve the situation is an important and necessary responsibility for every one of us. Today we have three guests, already familiar to listeners of Food Conversations. They all play an important role in the daily life of the Shuswap Food Action Society and on the food scene in general in Salmon Arm and the region around it. Melanie Bennett is the Society's project coordinator. Howie McMillan is a Society director and the former manager of the Downtown Farmers Market. And Liz Blakeway, who listeners have previously met as director of the Land to Table Network, is continuing that work, but has also recently become the Society's part-time interim executive director. So needless to say, we're going to talk about the Shuswap Food Action Society and what it's up to these days, and there's a lot of ground to cover. So welcome, Liz, Melanie, and Howie to Food Conversations.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Warren.
Always a pleasure to have you guys here. Just to remind listeners, this radio version of Food Conversations is actually an extension of a program that was established 7 or 8 years ago at Okanagan College under the banner of the Shuswap Food Action Society, and we just recorded our 100th podcast a little while ago.
Yay.
So like the society itself, this program and a lot of activities related to food in this community are really expanding at a quasi-exponential rate.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, the society itself was once a small organization, primarily coordinated by two people, Melanie and Serena Kaner, who I remember as a discontented dietitian at the Shuswap Lake General Hospital before she moved on to better things. And now the organization has grown into a multifaceted and important body that operates a wide range of programs in the Shuswap and now is expanding even south, so we'll talk about that. So let's start with you, Liz, because you're going to have to leave a bit early today.
Yeah, sorry about that.
And so I'm going to glean information. That's an agricultural term you probably recognized.
Good time.
From you now. Now, you've taken on this new role, but you've also kept the old role. Now, I suspect that that dual role has some ulterior motive and a constructive and positive one.
Mm-hmm.
It's bringing two entities together. So why don't you talk a little bit about that, the duality and collaboration that's built into what you're doing?
Yeah, well, I think what we're experimenting with here is like how to better share resources and expertise and capacity. Mm. Also, we were able to receive some funding from the United Way under their Regional Community Food Hub Initiative.
A grant.
A grant that is also ongoing funding through the United Way and their commitment to developing local food systems and food security work, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. So we were able to kind of leverage that funding to better connect and experiment with this idea of sharing resources, both through people, through funding, and ideally, eventually, expanding programs cross-regionally.
And that notion of, first of all, sharing resources, but then expanding programs so that everybody's kind of on the same page, although there are some individual characteristics of each organization.
Yeah.
That's something that it seems to me makes perfect sense.
Right. I mean, I think we've kind of been growing separately in separate regions. And I think that's important too, because our communities are unique in different, or they're different. Mm. They're unique. They're asking for slightly different things. But as we've grown, I think we're realizing we're trying to do the same work. We're trying to increase community food security. We're trying to better engage consumers to be more aware of where their food is coming from and how it's grown. We're trying to feed more vulnerable people who need more food now across all communities. And we're trying to grow our local food economy so that we can keep our farmers. So in that realization of doing the same thing, it makes sense to come together and increase our impact across our communities.
Keeping farmers that's a background issue that's always present.
Yeah.
And my understanding from people I've we've had in the show, is that there is a growth in the farmer community as people, and it's not old farmers' kids. It's people who really care about food and food production. Now, getting that message through to the people who play roles in the structure of the community, in other words, in our case, the City Council of Salmon Arm, has been moving slowly forward over a number of years, but has taken a bit of a step forward in the formation of, or the plan to form, a food and urban agricultural plan. Now, Melanie, I know you've been engaged in this process for a long time. On January 22nd, Dave Ganella, who's a councillor with the city, tabled a motion asking council to support, quote, the advancements of a food and urban agricultural plan, working with staff on the scope and funding opportunities and reporting back to council by July 2024. Melanie, why don't you lay out a little bit of that process? Because it's been a process, not an event.
It has, and it's actually been in progress. There's a report that already exists, an agricultural report, and I think it was from 2012.
John McLeod was...
Yeah, and actually, I had only just recently been living here, I think for a few years, and I actually have a picture in that report. It's a CSRD report. It's many, I think it's like a few hundred pages, maybe 100. Mm-hmm. So it exists, these reports and the recommendations that were made from it, they do exist. I think right now, one of the things that was made note of, actually Serena had mentioned it too, it needs to be updated. So I think we don't need to necessarily rework or start from scratch. All of this already exists. And now it's just more about, we are being shown that we need to now really focus on it. Get back into those pages, update them to include more food security. You know, it talked a lot about agriculture, land use, recommendations for farmers, but it didn't go enough as far as like food security for people who need the support. And that's where we need to now delve deeper into that aspect.
One of the issues of food security is that it really has to apply to everybody. It can't be just something for people who have enough disposable income that they can go down to the market and buy whatever they want. It also has to be something for everybody. It's interesting, within council now, you have people who are really quite supportive of this and are driving it forward. Louise Wallace-Ritten, who's one of the councillors, commented on the fact that the introduction of the comments prior to this notion of moving forward to July, that it would have been called a medium priority, which mentions over like two to four years, as opposed to immediate. And she'd actually voted to move it up on the priority scale. So within the body that is slow moving and has its priorities that it puts forward, there is already action that's taking place. So how are negotiations proceeding? Maybe Liz, you could comment on that.
Yeah, and I think I would also say, like, with regard to this agriculture plan, I think most regional districts have these agriculture plans because it's within their mandate as a local government to have that. It's land use management.
Right, for sure.
But I think municipalities are starting to see their intersection with food. And for the city of Salmon Arm, I think that probably was thrown in their face last year during wildfires when they had to house and feed wildfire evacuees on top of the growing demand for food and this increasing food insecurity in our communities that affect other aspects of social well-being. So I think they're starting to get it. And so I, in my new role, helping to represent Shuswap Food Action, I was able to meet with the city last week, and they're looking at funding opportunities to get the ball rolling on developing a plan. And what is exciting about that is they recognize that they are not the experts in food systems and food security work at that city level, and they want to create something that is meaningful to community and community driven and developed. And so we're hoping that we can help support them in those next steps.
So July is named as the month where something happens.
Yeah.
What is this something going to be? Melanie, Liz?
I think it's just that that city staff. I think Aaron Jackson has also been a part of this, like kind of overseeing how this rolls out. I think that they're just bringing recommendations to council for what next steps can include. And they're also, they've got a solid funding opportunity through Plan H funding that funds healthy public policy initiatives. And so I think they're going to try and take next steps through that funding and looking for council approval to move forward.
It's interesting. A word that's cropping up over and over again is funding. And it's funny how we tend to see a good idea as laudable, but then when it comes to actually implementing it, there have to be, you know, people talk about boots on the ground, but they also have to have money in the pocket of the people doing it. And we're going to be talking about funding and the problem that exists for all nonprofits right now and has always existed. Just to give you one example, when I started studying medicine at McGill, there was a Shriners Hospital that was a privately run hospital run by the Shriners organization, which is very much nonprofit. And it was helping kids with polio who had needed operations to lengthen tendons in their legs because they'd become constricted and they couldn't walk. And the government had looked at it for years and said, well, that's great, carry on. You know, we appreciate what you're doing. And then one year, the year that I arrived, it became politically impossible to have this being done in the private sector. It had to be funded by all of us. And boom, there it is. The hospital is now part of the McGill Hospital Network. And that's a process that happens over and over again, but it's really happening a lot these days. I'll remind listeners once again that I'm speaking with Melanie Bennett, Howie McMillan, and Liz Blakeway, who are all pivotal members of the Shuswap Food Action Society. Now, Melanie, and I'm not going to forget you, Howie, you're here, but you and Serena Kaner were sort of the, with John McLeod and a few other people, kind of the progenitors of the society, and you've been working to get more secure funding and collaboration with government bodies like the municipality. Now, it's a slow process. Sometimes it can appear to be glacial, but it's also part of a sort of a tumultuous time we live in when things are really changing a lot. And some of the things that are driving it, for example, are costs to people who need food. Now, Melanie, why don't you talk a little bit about what has driven some of the uptick in interest and engagement in the community with food issues? Obviously, there are things like rising costs of food. And recently, in the middle of this tumult, and as part of the funding issue that we'll be talking about a bit more, one of your programs, the Food Box program, the funding faded away. And this is one of the problems that happens with temporary funding, with grant funding, with contract funding. It can have a lifespan, and when it goes away, it leaves a big hole. But what about that, the rising costs, and also the climate events that are taking place? You mentioned that, Liz. Mm-hmm. How is that, or have you seen it pushing things forward a little bit, waking people up, as it were?
Certainly. I mean, our growth has catapulted since, you know, 2020 with, you know, with COVID. Things got shut down. All of a sudden, there was no kitchens open. There was limited access to resources that people may have already had. You know, even Lunch with Friends, which was an initiative done 4 years ago, when there was no kitchens available to feed anybody, but yet there's still folks on the street, you know, two passionate community members started feeding people. And that continues now to this day, because they've developed such a beautiful community down there. So, you know, certainly issues are showcasing the weaknesses in our food chain, our supply issues. So it's a silver lining. It's a bittersweet. We don't want to be thrust into these kinds of situations, and yet we are, and we're human beings are very adaptable. And I love the fact that we can focus on this. And, you know, before the show started, we talked about how, you know, people will make changes as they need to. And that's what we're doing. We, like you said, boots on the ground. We see the problem, we see the need, and we adapt and we create programs and projects to try and fill the gaps.
Speaking of gaps, there was a little gap filled in just recently. I understand that Starbucks, a very large organization that doesn't look at small community ventures unless they see something that would be helpful for themselves as well, gave a little bit of money. Liz, you mentioned that. Melanie?
But yeah, it will be seen. I think, well, and what it was highlighting, it was just this beautiful little email that popped into my inbox to say, Starbucks has neighborhood grants, and Shoe Shop Food Action was nominated and has now received this grant for the work that we've done, Melanie has done, on the John McLeod Community Garden, just in recognition. And I should say, like, as an relative newcomer to Shoe Shop Food Action, like, seeing the insides of the organization, there are a lot of these little recognitions that have popped up just in the last 2 months of me being on the scene that are quite incredible. Like the momentum, like you said at the start, is exponentially speeding up.
There's the, I have to bring up the Gandhian observation. First, they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. And it's actually a short version of a book written by a MIT professor called The Structure of Scientific Revolutions. There's a process where you don't seem to be getting anywhere and you get derision and disrespect, and then people start to take you seriously, and then an open and overt clash of different ideas and different ways of looking at things takes place. And then, because the new ideas are so powerful, the idea of local food, fresh local food that cannot be obstructed by a washed out highway or an extreme weather event in a faraway place.
Or corporate supply chains.
They're very vulnerable. And that's one thing that's emerging. When you have the full food grown here, it's not so vulnerable. Melanie.
I just want to make a comment to when you were talking about that quote, first they ignore you. Meant those years ago that Serena and I were sitting at those round tables, you know, John McLeod was the president, and the other members that were there too. This was the work that they were trying to achieve. They were trying to achieve food policy work. And at the time, I feel there was a great frustration at those tables and feeling like there was just no momentum forward. And we could feel that, they felt like they were kind of up against a wall. Serena and I at the time were like, well, you know, we just need to make local food more fun. If you want something to happen, you need the people behind you, and which is what Gandhi would have been doing as well, right? You need the people behind you. And so it was more about engagement. It was more about, you know, getting out in front of people again. Serena getting the farmers market starting again, getting the people into the community garden. So it was about, and our mission statement, building community around local food. It was getting the impetus of people, which then is what demands from leadership, which then is what creates change. And so I just want to recognize that John's legacy is becoming it's unfolding before us. We're very pleased that this is happening. Wish he could have been alive to see it unfolding. And so we're just feeling really honored that it's coming alive.
I had the great pleasure of having a visit with John just before he died. And we talked about all of these issues. And I would say unequivocally that his spirit is still alive in this whole process. He was a passionate advocate for food being a central feature in the community and its role in bringing people together, which you folks have carried on very well. Speaking of which, I believe there's a potluck coming up. We might as well bring that to the surface.
Yes, we think potlucks are a really great opportunity for people to come together to try new things, taste seasonal food, which is so much better than anything you'll ever buy at the store.
Asparagus.
Yes, strawberries and rhubarb, right? So we, as a society, we have to hold an AGM. And so that is part of this. We definitely want to encourage people to come to the AGM.
Which is the 19th?
It's going to be Wednesday the 19th. It's the day before summer solstice. So we have a theme. It's called Summer Solstice Salad Bowls. So when you think about...
This is public relations at its highest level.
Our spinoff on stone soup, right? So we do stone soup in the winter for coldest night of the year, and it's all about how you can bring together all these different ingredients to make something better. This is the same thing. We want everyone to bring an ingredient.
And where is it happening?
So it's going to be right there at the Shoeshop Agricultural Association's building, which was formerly the Church of Christ building. It's 490 Fifth Avenue Southwest.
The log cabin.
It's where we have the new John McLeod Community Garden. Mm-hmm. And so we have the building rented. We'll use the lawn. We got lots of space. We will hold our AGM inside. And we really do want people to come because we want to hear from them. We want people to become engaged. And we want to have a discussion.
I want to just step back a little bit and talk about an issue that I deal with all the time, which is human health. And the fact that for the longest time, my profession still doesn't get any training in nutrition during medical school. All you professors out there at medical schools, I hope you're listening to this program and paying attention because it's an extraordinary omission. But I want to ask each of you to maybe just say a few words about the connection between health, both personal health and community health, and food. Howie, you've been patiently waiting for an opportunity to speak, but why don't you just your general thoughts about that and how intimately involved they can be?
I think that's a good point, in that community and our sense of community is tied largely to food. It's part of our culture. We call agriculture in that sense. And I think that local food has that dynamic because people connect to it. They know who grew it. They know which farm it came from. They know whose garden that came out of. So that's the key to that whole concept, is that we need to connect people with their food.
Relationship. Mel?
I have great fortune to often have kids coming into the teaching garden, or we've done different kinds of programs at schools to talk about health and nutrition. One of the first programs we ever did was called Kindy Buddies. And we brought this whole, like, you know, eat the rainbow concept in. Starting with kids first and getting them to recognize the importance of food. We are seeing an unfortunate health crisis occurring. So many different diseases that ultimately are diet-based and preventable. And our medical system is challenged in our country. More and more people requiring services. We need to get back to a preventative model. We need to focus on health. And when we talk about food, I'm talking to the kids, we know that. I mean, you can find the information. It's easy to find. Our industrial system has stripped the land bare. There is no nutritional content in that soil anymore. So we have to localize, because now we can control what's going in our soil. We can control the systems, and we can see highly nutritious food coming from our own backyards, from our farms, and actually bringing that into our community, which is going to change the outcome for everyone.
Be no surprise to anybody here today that Harvard, a paper from Harvard University, outlines what was already published in a medical journal called Lancet, which pointed out that if you eat what we would consider a healthy diet, which is plant-based, not exclusively plant-formed, but plant-based and local and fresh, that's a diet that's good for planet Earth and good for the people who live on planet Earth. It's the same, one and the same thing. Liz, did you ever have any involvement with the Interior Health Authority? Have they come to your table saying, oh, we really like what you're doing?
Through Lancet table.
I was hoping you'd say yes.
Yes. Yeah. The health authority has some really dedicated dietitians who get exactly what Mel was just saying and care a lot about our communities being healthy. And what really struck me when we had our board retreat, when I first started, I think back end of April, we had a board retreat. So the Shoeshop Food Action board and staff came to my house, and we spent an afternoon thinking about, like, what we've achieved, what that means, and where we want to go. And what struck me when we started off, like, trying to delve into why we're all here in the first place, And what each person said is that not only are they fearful for what their children and grandchildren will face if we don't get a handle on our local food system, but also they care so deeply about the community here, and they know that in order for community to engage in community, they have to be healthy, and food is an integral part of that. And, you know, interior health dietitians who I work directly with at the Land to Table board level, they get that too.
Do you find that when they go back to their management structure, that their voices are listened to, or do they have to kind of advocate within the interior health structure to get people to understand that it's not all about, you know, somebody's appendicitis and or hemorrhoids? Yeah. It's also about it's about having the right kind of food, which actually would eliminate both of those problems, as it turns out.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I don't know if I can speak to that, except to the extent that big organizations like that are siloed, right? So they don't necessarily get the chance to tell their culinary director, who is managing the production kitchens in hospitals, that they have to have local food in there.
But, you know, they should.
Well, yes.
They should.
And we're working on that, too.
Yes, exactly.
And I want to make a mention that on an interview that John had on this radio station, he spoke exactly this, is that he'd love to see local food and better food in hospitals. So though we can't necessarily impact that at the moment, our next best step is to get the food into schools.
You know, it's funny, an organization I'm actively involved with is called the Canadian Association of Physicians for the Environment. We are concerned about a lot of these issues, and specifically about climate, because it's a driver of many things. But a colleague who's in public health sent me an email with some documentation of some of the new initiatives and said, I'm so disappointed that Canadian Association of Physicians for the Environment is not focusing on the food issue all that much. And one of the reasons that I mentioned already is that doctors don't get any training in nutrition or food when they're in medical school. And when it comes up as an issue, it's all about, well, yes, okay, if you have a horrible disease and you need to eat a special diet and because your medication won't tolerate normal food. It's not about how do you avoid getting that horrible disease in the first place. And yet there is abundant evidence that that is A, more compatible with human pleasure and satisfaction, and B, a lot more economically viable. It saves tons of money instead of spending tons of money. And ultimately, it's the backbone of all communities anyway.
Well, you're speaking to the complexity of food.
Oh, yes. or the mind of the human, which can get off track quite readily. Remind again, listeners, that I'm speaking with Melanie Bennett, Howie McMillan, and Liz Blakeway, who are all central members of the Shuswap Food Action Society. Now, we've been talking about sort of generalities a little bit, but it's probably time for us to focus on some of the actual programs that are running, and the fact that they're expanding, that the fact that they're having an expanding impact. I think the impact is the important part. Howie, you've been looking up some stats and talking to Mary Rodriguez, who's very involved with the school food program. Why don't you talk about how that is functioning now and some of the dimensions of it?
Sure. Thanks, Warren. By way of background, school meals is kind of one of the three primary programs that we offer. And it started largely, again, on initiative from Serena Kaner. About 3 years ago, she did a pilot project to serve hot meals in Jackson, along the local schools, and it was very well received.
That was
received.
Just the one program?
Yeah, and just one day a week type of thing. And in that time frame, that three-year time frame, it has taken off, and the provincial initiative, the Feeding Futures Initiative, has driven that. But Serena and Mary Rodriguez, who we met on this show before, is the school meal coordinator for our section of programs. And in the last 12 months, it's just exploded exponentially. Let me just peel off a few numbers that Mary gave us. From that one school, in less than 3 years, they are now serving hot meals in 24 of the schools in school district 23.
That is 83, exponential.
Which is incredible growth. Virtually all the schools have some variation of it. In the last school year, and not including the last week here, Mary tells us that they have served over 46,000 hot meals in school district 83 in one school year. In those schools. they essentially are now running at a pace where they're serving over 2,000 meals a week in our schools. The keys to remember from that is essentially, because of Serena and Mary's vision, much of the ingredients going into those foods are sourced from Shuswap farmers, Shuswap food producers. They are essentially driving the local food economy
yes.
through this program. And that's the key, I think, when we talk about the hospitals and we talk about the community at large. It's fine and dandy to feed people, it's a worthy cause, but to drive and encourage the growth of the local food system through our farmers and food producers is key.
It's a very powerful driver.
It is. And essentially, it's really capturing a lot of dynamics in our community. Mary tells me that they now essentially have 8 part-time cooks in various things. They work in the Zest Food Hub, the commercial kitchen there. They have cook in 3 different schools, and they essentially have a huge team of volunteers. They essentially have over 30 volunteers in addition to those 8 cooks, and they roughly have logged over 2,000 hours in volunteers. They've now branched out through, again, the support of Feeding Futures and the government into culturally appropriate food literacy programs. Mary is conducting various multicultural food preps in the schools, and the kids are just thriving on the notion that they can use these foods, much of it local, to provide food that they grew up with or their heritage brings them. So it's essentially a very dynamic and incredible growth in such a short period of time. It's just nothing short of amazing in my mind.
Well, I don't think anybody's mind would see it any other way, frankly. It is astonishing, but it's also, it presents challenges. And one of the challenges, and you mentioned volunteers, and you mentioned 8 cooks, part-time cooks, and if they're working sort of out of the goodness of their hearts, then they can do it for a while, and they want to keep going, but there's a point at which spending time doing that deserves some recompense. Where is funding, this word that we bandy about quite a bit, where is it coming from? What's the process that keeps this exponential growth from imploding?
I think, and again, we touched on it at the beginning of the session about how communities like ours, driven by heroes like John McLeod, have moved into a recognition that we need to get involved with that. And then local and regional and provincial and national politicians have caught on to that. And that's essentially what's coming. Going back to the Ministry of Health and Interior Health and the discussion there at the farmers market, they support a program called the BC Nutrition Coupons. And that's funding provided by the Ministry of Health on a provincial basis, and all of the local farmers markets benefit from that. The Feeding Futures funding that's coming out of the provincial government for schools is essentially, again, a response to this growing recognition that we need to address these issues, and there has to be not only hardworking volunteers and staff and other things, but essentially it has to be funded, and it has to be core funding from our elected representatives.
Yes, that inevitable process, which is complex, but it is the way that things end up becoming part of social norms. Liz, I know you have to head off shortly. I had mentioned earlier that you would have to depart. Mm-hmm. Before you go, do you have any final comments about your new collaborative, connecting, bridging role?
Yeah, good question. I think add to what Howie said, I think like that incredible number of volunteer hours that are going into this, volunteers do burn out. And if this program is going to continue to grow and sustain itself, I think what Shuswap Food Action Society is starting to look at is how do we provide secure positions that are paying people for the amount of hours that they are having to work to make these programs successful. And so that is a part of this collaborative role in one way, right? It's ensuring that we have the organizational structures and sustainability to maintain program delivery over time and provide secure employment for these super dedicated people in our community, some of whom might find it hard to find employment in other places. And so that's something that we're taking a look at. It's something I'm taking a closer look at with the help of Melanie and Howie and Mary and Serena still to some extent, to see how do we make sure that we're set up to continue this work into the future, especially if demand is going to increase.
An underlying issue here, which I'll just bring up, is not directly related to food, is the fact that there's massive income maldistribution in the world. There are people who earn so much money that if they spent $1 million a day, they could never catch up to their income. Somebody pointed out that if Bill Gates gave 1% of his income into the public, you know, domain, it would be $3.8 billion. But he'd been stuck with only having $245 billion at his disposal. And it's an unspoken, it's like the million-ton gorilla in the middle of the room, that some people have accumulated fortunes that are well beyond even imagination. There's no way to even conceive of it. And yet here we have people who are unhoused, who are unfed, and have no way themselves to regain that sense of community unless the rest of the community says, we're here and we're going to make sure it happens. Anyway, that's something that troubles me at 4 o'clock in the morning sometimes when I think about these kinds of issues. Now, I know you have to go, and we're very happy to have had you here in your new role and wish you well in it. It's a challenging role, but on the other hand, it's the kind of challenge that the 21st century is bringing upon all of us. So, yeah. It's your version of it.
Well, thank you. And I just, like, I feel so grateful. I feel both grateful and overwhelmed in the same moment often.
Yes.
But I just feel so grateful to be a part of this fold. Like, the praise and accolades going to this group of people, the momentum that's been gained, like, to be a part of it, if only in a small way at the moment, it feels like it's super meaningful. So I just feel really privileged to have been invited in to be a part of it all.
Well,
and I just want to make a comment to that too, because, you know, we're really, really glad to have Liz with us. We've known her actually for nearly 7 or 8 years. So when Liz first moved here, she's out in White Lake, and she came on the board of the Shuswap Food Action Society, but was offered a position for the North Okanagan. And so we've been working in parallel for a long time, and we bump into each other and we have these conversations. And so we are all care very much about this topic. So it's really wonderful to have her with us now. But it's also, you know, when I first joined up, it was, you know, you're trying to find the people who have the same passions and interests. And thank goodness there are so many people who like certain things. People within Canadian mental health who like, you know, there's people to do everything. And it's about finding your core group, people that you can talk about ideas with and you can share excitement for. I mean, even just talking to Mary about her passion for this particular topic, school meals. I do not necessarily share that same passion, but my passion is growing food. So I have that role. That's my passion. Mary has hers. Liz has some exciting idea that I haven't heard yet. And so this is what makes the organization fun as well. And that's what we want to encourage more people to even get involved with us.
One of the features of the change that we're talking about is that the driver of it is, first of all, nonprofit organizations. Mm-hmm. And this is not me speaking. This is research that's showing this is happening. Mm-hmm. And the second is that it's happening in small communities. It's not happening in big megalopolises. It's mm-hmm. happening in places like this because the connection is so much easier to establish between the parts of the community. Mm-hmm. You can go to the municipal government and say, we'd like to talk. You can go to the Interior Health, and or they might even come to you because they say, oh, we want to be part of what you're doing because it's really spectacular. Mm-hmm. So there's this synergy that is much easier to attain in a small community than it is in a large kind of homogeneous community where there's a lot of people doing the same thing. And it's also an opportunity to use a lot of public relations and not actually have real change taking place. Mm-hmm. So I think you've stepped into a situation that is just the right kind of situation for anybody who's attuned to all these kinds of mm-hmm. topics that we're talking
about.
Yeah,
and the vision for this community, like I know we talked about that yesterday. It's like, oh, what is your vision? Like we haven't fully fleshed that out. And so like those are the things that keep us on the phone. Like I was on the phone with Mary until 10 o'clock last night. Mary was like completing these stats for us until midnight. And it's like you get energy from each other because you care so much and you know the other person cares and you're doing it together.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so like I have no doubt that these exciting visions that we have to have our own kitchen space, to have our own growing farm, to be connected to the city of Salmon Arm and helping them develop food security policy. Like I have no doubt that those things are going to happen. And, you know, if we keep on this trajectory, it's going to happen sooner than what John had experienced.
You're all catching a wave. And the wave isn't us. The wave is the nature of the evolution of our planetary world. Mm-hmm. It's changing as we see it changing. We have enough intelligence to realize it's changing and to respond to those changes. We're slow sometimes in some issues, but nature gives us a little nudge every so often in the form of a wildfire or a heat dome or a massive flood. And as a result, it's harder and harder to play the old game. It's now becoming increasingly important to play a new kind of game and make it kind of a game. That's how you survive. You know, kids can teach us a lot by saying learning through games. We can introduce it. And the thing about food is I wouldn't call it a game, but it's an enjoyable thing that you just, you know, you put in your tummy and you don't think about anything other than that was a really nice meal. And then all these nice people are sitting around here eating meals with me. Remind listeners once again that I have three guests from the Shushrup Food Action Society here in the studio today. Melanie Bennett and Howie McMillan are still with us. And just a few moments ago, Liz Blakeway, who is the director of the Land to Table Network and the interim part-time executive director of the Shushrup Food Action Society, has just left the studio. But her memory,
she's got things to do.
Her memory lingers on. Yes, indeed. Well, the work that is being done is broader than just us as individuals. It's a process that is sweeping through kind of global society and changing things. Let's talk about one of the institutions, and that is the Downtown Farmers Market. Now, Howie, for a number of years, you were the face of the market. We've had many conversations standing beside one or another vendor. But now you have someone taking on the daily day-to-day job, Christine Tether. She is now the manager of the farmers market. But you're down there kind of mentoring her and kind of helping her with things that you've picked up over the years. What's it like after the first year that you kept the market open all through the winter? How did that go down, as they say?
It's an indication of the momentum that our organization has had. The farmers market, again, is one of the three main programs or areas of work for Shushrup Food Action, and we've been hosting the market now. This is entering into our fifth season. And the growth is essentially leveled off in that we have a permitted area within the boundaries of it. But the market itself has really continued to thrive and grow. We see attendance, we see volumes of sales, everything else going up. And it is a big job in that sense.
Starts early on Saturday morning and ends middle of Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, it's kind of an 8-hour shift in that sense. And Christine has come on board. She started in early May and she caught the end of the winter
What's
season
Christine's
market.
Background? What's her background?
She has been in the Salmon Arm area for 10 or 11 years now. She is married. Her husband works with the Ministry of Health and Children. She worked in a variety of capacities. She has three young children and they homeschool those children. So she's a busy gal, but she's plunged into her role at the market and is doing a great job in that sense. So it's really helping. And yes, this is the first year that we have run the market every Saturday with a 2-week break for Christmas, of course. But essentially, this winter was our third year as a winter market and the first winter running every Saturday. And the response to that has been phenomenal. The vendors are really enjoying a surge in that attendance because people are plugged in now to the notion
that they know
it's
happening every week.
they know if it's Saturday morning, the market is on. They don't have to worry about whether it's an off week or what it is. And attendance has really come up. And it is really kind of amazing when you think of January and February is not great months to be shopping outdoors, but their response has been great and it's building from there. And I think it's an indication, and we touched on it earlier in the discussions about how Shusat Fuet action, and you used the term catching a wave, that momentum is growing in all of our programs. We run 11 different programs at this time, the farmers market being only one of them. School meals and community gardens and all of those things are all growing. And I think it's a part of the general sort of atmosphere in our community where food and food awareness and growing your own food and the capacity to build our local food system is sort of rising in awareness with everyone. And that response is coming into all of the feedback that we're getting, the response that, you know, grand openings for the community garden, for instance, where it was a celebration of local food and all of the players in that. So yes, it is really growing in a sense that it's responding to the needs of the community and the awareness of the community, but it's an indication that we're in the right mood, we're in the right frame of mind to deal with some of these food security issues in our community.
The whole work of the Shuswap Food Action Society is around insight. It's around understanding. And John McLeod, who we've mentioned several times today and will probably go on mentioning for a long time because his name is enshrined in various parts of what's going on. But it was an insight from an old farmer who said, we got to do better. We can bring back stuff we once had that was good, and we can expand into new ways of doing things that are also good. And insight, it seems to me, is one of the... Somebody said that humans have invented something that was never been seen before, and that's a future. We can visualize a future. Many of our companion species on the planet live very intricately with the ecosystem. We can see down the road, or we are inclined to see now, down the road. Not always, but when we do it, we can really come up with some wonderful ideas. Now, part of that, of course, is to translate insight into understanding from people who have not yet developed the insight, and that's what education is all about. Mel, why don't you talk a little bit about the teaching garden? There's some new developments there, and there's some new teaching. There was a whole host of teaching things going on.
Yeah, and you said insight, and I've been thinking strategy, right? A lot of things that we've been doing is about strategic planning, knowing that when we build it, they will come. So the teaching garden is in its ninth season. So the Shuswap Community Teaching Garden is one of our sort of primary programs that we've been taking on for the last 5 years. It's grown. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful space. And we're really fortunate that the landowners continue to allow us to use it. We benefit so greatly from the mentorship of a farmer and a permaculture educator. I mean, they have been holding down the fort, the garden, for the last 2 months because I've been doing something else. And so I'm really grateful for them to be there and our volunteers who are up there and passionate about this garden.
And you have a gazebo.
What just about? So yeah, so the garden itself has grown from just half of the garden to the entire space is now doing something, whether it's a children's play area, new pollinator gardens, homemade raised beds just to show people how they can do it. And then to the garden itself, which is in full production, to a permaculture display area. We have a calendar people can have a look at on our website so that they can know when there is actually like what we consider sort of our community garden crew. So you can come and learn. And that's the point of this garden. We need it to be a teaching garden. We grow the food to give to the community, but we really want people to come and learn. So please do. We are fortunate, like a lot of our, everything that we're doing is based on people who we would consider champions and people who are passionate about something. And I want to say thank you to Rita Greger. She is one of our champions at the Teaching Garden. She is a really hardworking lady. And she gets up there and she is an amazing weeder. And she is also a Rotarian.
That's a new occupation.
She's one of our main contributors to the food programs too. she's also everywhere in the community, and she is a champion of that garden. And with her help, she approached Rotary, and we've received some funding from the Shuswap Rotary, and they have bought us a permanent structure, a new gazebo, so that we can actually do some classes and have protection.
Let's talk about another initiative, which is Project Grow. Educational, active, hands-on.
Project Grow actually came to us from the fair. So Jim McEwen, the fair manager, he approached us and said, you know, there's this youth garden contest out in Summerland. They've been doing it for 25 years. And, you know, should we do something like this? And absolutely we should. So, I mean, we want kids learning these skills. So he approached us with that term, but we are looking at that now as that as an umbrella term. Project Grow will be one of our programs that we build different projects underneath. And in this case, we have a youth garden contest. This is its second season. And we now have 35 youth, age 9 to 12, in the Shuswap, who are growing a garden at home, who will grow the entire season. They, you know, they have to create a garden plan. They got free seeds and plants from Buckerfields. And then it's under the mentorship. We've now engaged Jasmine Evans of Grow and Change Horticulture. She's our main lead on this. She's really passionate about seeing people grow food as well. So we're, you know, we're thrilled. We want to say thank you to SASCU and the Agricultural Association because they are providing the RESPs, which is really what gets the parents involved too.
You're going to talk about briefly some other things. At the Fall Fair, you have an education series. What, third year now coming up?
We're not going to do it this year.
Okay.
We've done it for 2 years, and you know, we provided amazing presenters. You were there as well. We were talking about climate. But we didn't actually get great attendance. Okay. And so we have them recorded. We probably will set up a booth and I think we might show them, but we'll rethink that. And mm-hmm. that's the thing, you know, sure. Strategy means that you're also reviewing what you're doing. And
absolutely.
If something's not working, you need to reimagine it. So we definitely want to do something different in the future. This year though, the fair is also a little bit in flux with the arena not being available. So we're going to do a quiet year this year. We're going to certainly present our winners for the youth garden contest. But as far as the urban agriculture barn and presentations, we're going to reimagine that this year.
So we're coming sort of the end of the show, and I want to make sure a couple of points are made. First of all, the AGM, let's just mention it again, when, where.
The AGM and our summer potluck, community potluck, will be on Wednesday, June 19th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Shuswap Agricultural Association building, which is at 490 Fifth Avenue Southwest. And it's where we have the John McLeod Community Garden. So we're going to do an open house with that too. Not everybody was able to come to the grand opening, but we do want people to be able to come and have a look if they're curious to see how we've built it and the plants that are growing in it.
And for people who don't remember address numbers in Salmon Arm, it's the log building on the corner of the
across from Blackburn Park.
Exactly. And the potluck?
Potluck, yes. I mean, we want a variety of foods, and we know that our community...
Where and when?
The potluck is on June 19th.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
okay.
It's the same time. So we'll have our potluck first.
Oh, that's a good way to get people out.
We want to invite people to come at 5. We want to eat at 5:30, yes. And then we'll have our AGM at 6:30.
When you had your, just a moment to go, when you had your retreat, what would you say, you were both there, what would you say was the thing, just in a single phrase, that really struck you at that time that motivated you and made you want to keep going? Mel?
We want to work together to build something that we believe is very important. And that's what's beautiful, and it will be with many organizations who do things, is that you have a shared vision. And in that, power comes from working together, and we like collaboration, and we like working on ideas together.
Howie?
Yeah, I think that really captured it. And in a nutshell, it was to see the passion and the shared passion amongst all of the players. And Liz, as she mentioned, hosted it at her home, and this was kind of her first act as our executive director. And really, it opened up that whole potential for collaboration with Land to Table and other cross-regional organizations, and to recognize that the work we're doing is so important that we need to re-engage as individuals and work together to bring forward all of these missions, you know, our building community around local food.
Well, this has been a lovely summation of the work of the Shuswap Food Action Society, but also the context in which this work is taking place, which is fairly sweeping transformational change in a topic that is central to all of our lives, which is food, but also in the way we structure our community and the way we interact with one another. So I've been delighted to have Melanie Bennett with us, who's the project coordinator of the Shuswap Food Action Society, Howie McMillan, who is a director and still has a hand in the farmers market, and Liz Blakeway, who is the director of the Land to Table Network and the society's interim executive director. It's been a real slice, which is something you do with food. You slice it into little layers, but a really important show to talk about the broad view of what's going on.
Thank you. Congratulations to the two of you for your continued work with the Food Conversations and that 100th episode.
I hold it all
to Tom. What are we, 102 now?
We're way up
well
there.
Well done to both of you. Thank you.
Yes, it's great to have you in our community. Thanks a lot.
Happy to be here. Very much so.